provincial teams and developing those relations. So the idea now is that we're out in the community, we're making those connections. The policy and advocacy team will be doing a lot of advocacy around those needs and gaps. And the operations support team will be working with businesses and residents to deal with some of the externalities. Trying to get information out, trying to be as accessible as possible, but really importantly, try to build those relationships. We are a smaller municipality compared to some municipalities, so we're really dependent on relationship building and recognizing that these are senior government responsibilities. We are trying to shift some of the costs from the city, which is bearing those right now, to the senior levels of government. And like I said, we've had some success, so we're going to continue moving forward in that regard.
Yeah, it's much like John said earlier, we spoke how complex this project was, how many moving parts there were. It has been a challenge to get them all up and running at full speed right at the same time, right at the beginning of the project. But I think we're there now. I think we've got most of the moving parts moving, if you will, and it's time to start to actually make a real impact on the community. We recognize there's two components to this. There's a short-term and a long-term component that I think John's alluded to before, and we have the short-term results just starting to grind out or just starting to operate. And what we need to do now is start to take information from that group. And like John said, it's time to really start a real push on that advocacy to the senior level of levels of government, so that the resources that the people out in the field and on the ground have are available to them to have a meaningful impact.
Great. Thanks to both of you. Is there anything else that you think the audience should know about the project?
I think I'll turn it over to Rhea with regards to if she's there for more information. She's a communications. Yeah.
Okay, so I guess if anyone's interested, they can go to the webpage. So it's newwestcity.ca/crisis, I believe, -response-project. I can also supply you with the link after the interview. And we also have information that is starting to go out on our social media channels. So we don't have a separate channel per se, but if you're following any of the New Westminster accounts, so Instagram, Facebook, and X, formerly Twitter, we do post some information there as well. We just recently did a Did You Know campaign, which actually points to the point in time homelessness count that John has referred to. So if anyone's interested in looking at those stats, they can find them there.
Great. Thanks a lot to all three of you.
No, thank you so
much.
Thanks, Jesse. Appreciate it.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
The Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline is now live nationwide, offering a confidential multilingual service 24/7 to connect human trafficking victims and survivors with social and emergency services. We welcome calls if you have tips, concerns, or questions about human trafficking in your community. If you need help or want to help stop human trafficking, call the hotline now at 1-833-900-1010.
You may think of hackathons as multi-day events, with programmers side-by-side staring at computer monitors while vigorously writing code. Well, for the Neil Squire Society, their recent holiday hackathon tasked its participants with hacking toys. You heard that right. The Neil Squire Society, a disability services and support organization in Burnaby that utilizes technology to empower Canadians living with disabilities, held a hackathon on November 22, 2024 at Brentwood Mall that let members of the public sit down and hack toys, equipping them with assistive switches that made these toys more accessible and easily usable for children living with disabilities. CJSF was able to attend the event, where we witnessed toys at every workbench being diligently worked on by volunteers, the smell of smoke in the air, and the buzzing and whirring of soldering irons at each table. Afterwards, we were able to speak with Chad Lehman, the organization's director of innovation and the co-founder of the Neil Squire Society's Makers Making Change program, which connects their volunteers with people with disabilities that are in need of assistive devices.
Think of them sitting around making code. This is more of a physical hackathon where we're making basically parallel circuits and toys, so having an alternate way to control them, turn on and off with different assistive technologies that the end user may use. So this is our biggest event. We're doing a part of our Hacking for the Holidays campaign. We're doing 80 events across Canada with the goal to adapt 2,000 toys and switches and get them out for free to our community partners across Canada. So they go to the Children's Hospital here in BC, BC Children's Hospital, the Sunny Hill Unit, as well as many early childhood development center, and even directly to some families that have kids with disabilities so they have the ability to play this holiday season too.
Later on, we asked Lehman how the Neil Squire Society was choosing the specific toys to hack in this event.
They want something that sort of engages at least one of the senses. So something either makes some sound, some lights, or other sort of tactile sort of pieces. Right now, this current group is adapting these cute little fuzzy hedgehogs that so they play like a soft sound and music as they play. But we've done some bubble blowers earlier today, and we have some other light-up wand sort of toys that we're doing as well. So different opportunities, different kids are going to be motivated to play with different things, so we have a wide variety of sort of options. The nice thing about doing this sort of hackathon thing is anything that takes a battery, you can usually adapt. If you go buy the Switch adapted toys that are commercially available, last year in Canada, there was three different options for sale, and the bubble blower cost $300. So we bought a bunch of bubble blowers at the end of season for about $5 each, and then the volunteers are adapting them. So it's much more affordable, and you get a much wider variety of selection.
Afterwards, Lehman provided some insight for those who may be interested in volunteering with Makers Making Change and the Neil Squire Society.
We served over 12,000 people this last year. So there's a number of programs that run in Neil Squire. If people want to volunteer, we take volunteers for both our digital literacy tutoring program as well as our Makers Making Change program. And that's what the Makers Making Change program is part of this today. So this is where people, they have some skills like soldering or STEM, or they're like an engineering student group at SFU. They can get involved, help build toys, build adaptation, do some of the 3D printing for us. And we should have some grants to run out to help support student groups who want to run this initiative soon. So you should get in touch with us, makersmakingchange.com.
As the holidays continue, the Neil Squire Society will continue holding these holiday hackathons in the hopes that these switch-assisted toys are able to reach the homes of children living with disabilities throughout BC and Canada. Thank you so much for tuning into this segment. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM of Burnaby. And this piece would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. This piece can also be listened to on frequencynews.ca.
Hey, honey, I'm on my way. See you soon.
To listen again, press 1.
Hey, honey, I'm on my way. See you soon.
To listen again,
Hey, honey, I'm on my way. See you soon.
To listen
Hey, honey, I'm on my way. See you soon.
When you lose someone, the first thing you forget about them is their voice. With your help, we can prevent more lives from being silenced. MAD Canada. No alcohol, no drugs, no victims. Find out more at mad.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.com. cfur.ca or cfur.ca. Canada Post is a Canadian Crown corporation that provides mail delivery services across the country, founded in 1867, and its operations are funded by revenue generated by the sale of its products and services, not by taxpayer dollars, which is commonly assumed. Strike action was initiated against Canada Post by the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, or CUPW. Their strike began Friday, November 15th. Rick Harris, president of CUPW Local 812, that's a chapter of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers here in Prince George, BC, sat down with us at a local cafe to give us his perspective so far. That was Thursday, November 28th. The strike continues as of now, Monday, December 2nd, 2024. A reference for clarity in this interview, RSMC stands for Rural and Suburban Mail Carrier. Canadian Labor Minister Stephen McKinnon has been tentatively involved in negotiations between the two parties. So far, the minister nor the federal government has applied third-party binding arbitration to the dispute, in which case a third-party arbitrator would decide the terms of a new collective agreement, and during that process, union members would be legislated back to work. Our conversation with Mr. Harris begins with his thoughts on where he feels pending third-party arbitration is at or is possible in the near future.
I heard this morning that the special negotiator was in for a week, so that was last week, and then asked for two more days, which ended last night at the end of business day, I guess, in Ottawa. And then this morning came out and said the parties are too far apart. My understanding is they're not even in the same room as far as negotiations are concerned. They're in two separate rooms. The mediators are going back and forth. So, yeah, we're a long ways away. As far as binding arbitration, the government has said they're not interested in stepping in. And this is my fourth job action since I've been with Canada Post. In the last three, they have stepped in and they have forced us back and they have forced binding arbitration on us. It's not something we're interested in. We would really like a negotiated contract for both parties and for the public of Canada.
For a quick timeline, in 2021, Canadian postal workers renewed a contract for a period of 2 years with Canada Post and began negotiating a new contract November 2023. As of December 31st, 2023, the contract, which renewed in 2021, expired, leaving employees without a contract from that point forward. And Rick Harris shares why postal workers are striking now during what is typically their busiest time of year.
We didn't choose this particular time of job action, so we've been negotiating with the corporation since November of 2023. And it took them 10 months to make us an offer. And they didn't make us an offer until we decided to take a strike vote across the country to see where the members were at as far as striking was concerned. So had they made an offer in May, then likely we're out in June when it's not impacting the people as much. We're standing out getting a tan as well as doing job action. You know, it's not snowing, it's not cold. So we waited as long as we could, and it wasn't until they decided to change the terms of our job conditions, which means that we didn't have any more protection as far as our collective agreement was concerned, that our National Executive Board decided that this was the best choice of action here.
The goal here, if I'm not mistaken, is to earn a wage that covers the cost of living, takes care of downtime, helps prepare individuals for the time in their life when they can no longer work or at least physically deliver mail. How's that for a summary?
Pretty good. There's a lot to unpack in this. So for the people right now that are employed by Canada Post, sure, I mean, the cost of living has gone up, so we would like wages to sort of reflect that. One of the other things that's really important is our pension. Our Divine pension plan is very solvent. It's at like over 140%. Canada Post actually has been forgiven their payments into it over the last couple of years. They want to change that. They want to change that for new hires, which then you split up your two pensions, and sooner or later, the one pension becomes not solvent anymore because there's nobody putting money into it. So that's one of the other things. Health and safety is huge for both our urban members and our RSMCs. 26K walks, packing 30 pounds of mail, icy, slippery. Our letter carriers and RSMCs are some of the highest injured in the sector. Actually, I think they are the highest injured in the sector. So as far as health and safety is concerned, as the union is concerned, is that there's something called SSD, which stands for Separate Sort and Delivery. So right now, the letter carriers and the RSMCs, they sort their own route in the morning, and then they go out and they deliver their route. So you get a balance. You're inside in the building for a first however long it takes somebody to sort a route, and then you're outside walking, delivering the route that you sort. What the corporation wants to do is they want to have separate sort and delivery, which means that somebody will be sorting for 8 hours a day and somebody will be walking for 8 hours a day. And there's no balance there. So repetitive injury is very, very common in people who sort all the time. That only raises the injury rate. That doesn't help. That is not an answer to our health and safety concerns at all. And so that's one of the things that we're not interested in for our letter carriers. The benefits, Canada Post has, if anybody doesn't know, they have suspended all benefits to all members. So we're talking about short-term disability, long-term disability. They've stopped medications and services that people need that could be life-threatening. So Canada Post isn't really playing clean in this particular thing. We're concerned about that. We're concerned about all our members, and we're also concerned about the people that come after. I mean, I've only got a few years left. I'm kind of an old dog in the game. But what about the young people that are coming up that would like a decent job with decent wages and decent benefits and pensions? We're standing for those people as well.
A perhaps interesting aspect of the bargaining is that an expansion of services is being asked for from the employees rather than the corporation itself. Harris went on to describe a number of ways in which they are requesting Canada Post expand their services to adapt to a changing economy, which included increasing parcel services, offering weekend delivery, integrating a postal banking system, especially for rural areas in Canada, wellness check-ins for senior citizens and socially isolated individuals, and even electric vehicle charging stations at certain Canada Post outlets to expand charging infrastructure. To get a sense of what many local businesses might be considering during this time of the postal workers' labor action, we got a word in with Neil Godbout of Prince George's Chamber of Commerce. Do you see the event of the Canada Postal Workers' Strike as a reminder to diversify shipping options in local business, or does it serve as a reminder to support the institutions that have knowledge, experience, and existing infrastructure to reach clients everywhere? Is that a balance businesses are weighing right now?
If there is a business case to be made for a private shipper to provide parcel delivery service in Mackenzie, to Fort Nelson, to my old hometown of Hay River Northwest Territories, they will do that. And if there isn't, that's where Canada Post has to fill in.
When reached for comment, Canada Post provided the following statement. In an effort to move talks forward, Canada Post, earlier today, Sunday, December 1st, presented the Canadian Union of Postal Workers with a comprehensive framework for reaching negotiated agreements. The framework includes proposals to bring greater flexibility to the corporation's delivery model, while also demonstrating movement on other key issues. It is our hope that these proposals will reignite discussions and, together, with the support of mediators, help the parties work toward final agreements. To facilitate talks, we will not be providing further details outside the negotiations process at this time. We understand the impact of CUPW's national strike is having on our employees and so many Canadians. Canada Post remains committed to negotiating new collective agreements that will provide our employees and customers with the certainty they are looking for. Phil Legault, Media Relations, Canada Post. At least as of December 2nd, 2024, negotiations are ongoing.
What's Christmas on the picket line look like? Have you been through that before? Is this something you think could happen this year?
Not in my time. So again, this is my fourth time with Job Action. We've actually have not been out at Christmas in the last 20 years, which is how long I've been with the corporation. There has been Job Action just before, and then always we've been forced back, or it's been settled. Forced back, I think, would be more likely. So I don't know. I don't know what that looks like, and I sure hope that we have a negotiated contract coming up here really quickly so that we can start delivering the Christmas presents and Santa letters.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.
With 1.5 million Canadians identifying as blind or having low vision, what will the future look like as we move to a world where using our eyes for screen time is at an all-time high? The BC Yukon Division of the Canadian Council of the Blind, or CCB, is a group run by the blind for the blind, where sports and recreation, technology training, and peer support are just a few of what they offer. To find out more, visit ccbbcyukon.com.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain.
This is a CHY News update. Supporting diversity and those on gender journeys, local pride group The Coast is Queer is hosting a free clothing event with gender-affirming styles and accessories this weekend. On November 30th from 2 to 5 p.m., The Coast is Queer and the First Unitarian Fellowship of Nanaimo is hosting a clothing event to offer a safe space for transgender and non-binary people to find new gender-affirming clothes. The Transform Your Clothing event is for transgender and non-binary people to come and celebrate their authentic selves by bringing together the community through connection, fashion, and self-expression. Co-founder of The Coast is Queer, Ash Horner, came down to our studio to speak about the event. Horner says the group was first created 3 years ago when they and fellow founder Erica Bakewell saw that there was a need for more community events for the 2S LGBTQIA+ community in the area. The group hosts events such as the popular monthly Queeroke, doing karaoke at the Quarterway Pub. The group has also organized in support of the 2S LGBTQIA+ community in Nanaimo, leading a counter rally against the anti-SOGI protest in 2023. More recently, they organized a rally at the Vancouver Island University women's basketball team game in support of transgender athlete Harriet McKenzie. Horner says the idea for this event came after they recently took time to go on their own journey with their gender to understand what gender meant to them. During this process, they realized they wanted to do something significant for other transgender and non-binary people who also may be on their own journey.
The basis of it was finding a space that is comfortable to go and find apparel that would affirm one's gender. It's not always super comfortable walking into a shop that is male female and you're female presenting going to the male side. It can be nerve-wracking.
Horner says gender affirming clothes are clothes meant to help someone express themselves and their gender even if it's not the same gender they were assigned at birth.
Gender affirming apparel refers to clothing, accessories, and some undergarments that help an individual express their gender identity in the way that feels authentic and comfortable to them. This includes items designed to align one's outward appearance with gender identity, boosting confidence and reducing gender dysphoria. So some of those things are chest binders, bras, padded bras, different clothing styles.
Along with having clothing available that was donated from the community, VI Binders will be at the event. They are a Vancouver Island-based nonprofit that helps people access affordable and safe gender-affirming products such as chest binders, a garment used to flatten chests. Makeup artist Sherry Taylor will also be at the event offering free makeup tutorials. Also in attendance is clothing brand Jensky Apparel, who has donated new clothing available for anyone of any gender and size. They'll also be offering tailoring by donation. Horner did not start to explore their gender until they turned 43, and they say everyone's journey to find their authentic self and feel comfortable with their gender will be different.
I always wanted to wear what my brother was wearing, or, you know, I didn't want to wear the church dress. I just never felt right. And then as I got into my teen years, then I started questioning. And I remember talking a little bit about it with my sister. And as I got a little more older, but there was so much stigma around being gay, queer, even within family systems, right? It may not be safe or comfortable to explore that. And so as now at 43, about a year ago, I stepped away to kind of find myself and learn a bit more.
Horner says everyone's journey with gender will be different for everyone, but every journey someone takes is beautiful.
Explore it, question it, and also don't discount anyone that might be exploring it, because we're talking on a biological level. This isn't just you wake up one day and say, oh, I think I want to be a boy.
To support those who may be nervous to join events hosted by The Coast is Queer, Horner says volunteers now offer to meet people outside their events and personally walk them in.
We'll meet you outside, like personally. I will go outside and I'll introduce myself, introduce each other, and then I will take the person into karaoke and introduce them to everybody. And every time it happens, they become regulars and they really find their communities.
Horner says for the event, they hope attendees get a sense of self, but also a sense of community. They say this will be a safe environment for people to explore their gender, even if it's their first time. The Transform Your Clothing event will take place at the First Unitarian Fellowship of Nanaimo at 595 Townsite Road on Saturday, November 30th from 2 to 5 p.m. More information about the event can be found on the Coast is Queer's Facebook page. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Holiday season, when it's time to choose the right tree, some trees will be chosen for their size, some for their shape, and some for their shelter. Let's have fewer people under a tree this Christmas. Don't let homelessness assumptions get in the way of homelessness solutions. Go to CanadaCanDoIt.ca. Help the Canadian Alliance to end homelessness.